Hello. Vince Crowe has heard somewhere that you could trade a piece of useless junk on the internet and, within a year of swapping it for better and better things, get cool stuff. Crowe decided that he himself was going to start off as that piece of tat and jump from one job to the next. Indeed, he would trade one lifestyle for a new one until he was finally a success. Every 3 months he would have to trade up for an entirely new life, a new job, a new girl, new wheels, a new pad, new threads, until he reached the top. The plan of comparing himself to a used item traded over the internet was, of course, marginally flawed, as there's a human factor to all of this which he'd overlooked. Besides, success isn't just about work, it's about the car, the clothes, the house, and getting the girl. So changing all of that with every new trade upwards is a lot more difficult than swapping an old stereo in the classifieds. Crowe quickly learns what the price of success really is, an education he would never have got if he'd gone to college. Well, we're going to listen to three excerpts from the novel Trading Vincent Crowe by D.C.J. Wardle. Firstly, social ineptitude is one of Vince's challenges in life, and one which he needs to overcome if he's to trade up his life for a better one. This first extract is an example of an attempt by Vince to deal with this shortcoming.
Vince stood in the cold at the bus stop and looked at his watch. The bus was 5 minutes late. Minutes at a cold bus stop could be almost as long as minutes in the factory. He shuffled his feet to keep warm, and became aware that the black-haired, pierced foreign girl was standing near to him. Presumably, if she had developed a good grasp of the culture and transport system arrangements of her adopted country, then she was waiting for a bus as well. If not, she was probably lost and requiring help. This would be unfortunate, as Vince didn't speak Russian. Otherwise, she was simply there to be near Vince, as per Larry's theory of the daily factory walk past. It was all very awkward. He should speak to her. Definitely. Earlier, in the factory, she had smiled coyly at him. It was done so subtly that it was almost unspottable, and could easily be put down to either an overactive imagination or an underactive mind. Now she was standing next to him. She had laid the cards on the table. It was up to him to make his move. Vince half looked at her. He didn't want to look at her full on, in case he'd been wrong about the coy look, and she would then think he was some kind of weird sexual predator. At the same time, he didn't want to be not looking at her, in case she thought he was just going to talk to himself. Having got himself at an angle which he decided was most appropriate, he knew it was time to throw caution to the wind and go for it.
Yeah, all right.
There was then a very long pause, which Vince considered filling with his own coy smile. He'd quickly realised that with his impetuousness and spontaneity he'd not thought this through. It was normally good to have at least one topic of conversation before starting a conversation. You could get away without having a topic when you started a conversation with your mates, but this didn't work with a complete stranger.
Joe, take the bus then.
The black-haired girl politely smiled at him before looking back up the road to see if the bus was coming. Stupid question, Vince thought to himself. She's standing at the bus stop waiting for it. It would help if he knew the Russian for bus. Vince decided to try a different tack. There was another long pause.
I've seen you at work. Sometimes you come past our section. My name's Vince.
The girl turned to Vince and smiled again.
Kalina. Oh, that's an interesting name, Kalina. Is it Russian or something?
I am a Polish.
Ah, right.
Vince desperately tried to think of anything he knew about the Polish so as not to lose her attention now that the conversation was starting to flow more easily.
You got a lot of coal.
The puzzled face of Kalina implied further explanation would be helpful.
Well, not you. Your country, Poland. We did it in geography, like.
Kalina smiled back and then pointed up the road.
The bus, it is here. I going to town for shops. You want to join? We have coffee?
Vince followed her onto the bus and sat next to her. What was the modern world's obsession with coffee? Surely friends wasn't on in Poland as well.
At the end of his second trade-up, Vince makes a rash decision to head for London with his new girlfriend Kalina and work in the hotel trade. Before he leaves, he resolves to chase up the reference owed to him by the landlady from his washing-up days at the pub. Vince lives with his nan, and their minimal interaction never manages to result in any genuine communication. Let's hear more in the next extract.
When Vince had last been at the carrot and jam kettle, Natalie had promised him a reference. It was now time to collect. The phone was in the kitchen, and so any call made in that house required competing against both the television and his nan's train of thought. His ever-present nan watched from her position by the electric fire as he lifted the receiver and began to dial.
That thing's not worth the pissing line rental, Vincent. I just get calls from salesmen with their pissing timeshare nonsense.
Vince's nan gestured towards the replacement second-hand TV. She had sourced it via a classified ad in one of the free papers that collected as an ever-building fire hazard beneath the front door.
That's the woman that's been fitted with one of them elastic bands they put around your stomach. Costs a pissing fortune, they say. She should just get off her pissing backside and walk to the shops each day like the rest of us. Mrs. Garrett was at the grocer's yesterday and says they've changed the shop around so the papers are now in the middle and you've got to go all the way to the pissing back to get the tin fruit.
Vince was glad to hear Natalie's voice on the other end of the phone. Much as he had been dreading the conversation, he really didn't want to have to think about daytime TV presenters having elective surgery on their digestive systems, or even Mrs. Garrett's tin fruit dilemma. If Dennis Sedgwick had answered, it would have been more awkward, and Vince had yet again failed to prepare a backup conversation for that eventuality. He doubted that Dennis would appreciate a call where a panicking ex-employee invited him to offer an opinion on surgically inserted elastic bands.
The carrot and jam kettle, Natalie speaking.
All right, Natalie, it's Vince.
Natalie's contrived, chirpy call centre tone deteriorated rapidly to her usual Midlands drone.
What do you want, Vince? I thought we agreed you were going to keep away. Dennis still doesn't know why you've left, and I've no blooming intention of letting him find out.
It's all right, Nat. I'm not looking for trouble. I just need that reference, the one you promised. I'm going to look for work in the hotel trade, so I need you to say I've got experience in the catering and hospitality trades.
They reckon you're closer to a rat when you're in a hotel than when you're in a pissing sewer these days. Nan, shush.
Sorry, Nat.
Dennis is going down the cash and carry this afternoon. We're getting low on vermouth and the box of scratchings finished on Sunday. Come round about 4:30 and I'll have it ready. Come to the kitchen door. Oh, thanks, Nat.
They're in the walls, you see. There was a big one in the rubbish last week before the binman came. I had to throw a pissing saucepan at it. I reckon they're coming over the wall from Mrs. Barry's. Their bins are always full of pissing takeouts from the Indian.
Vince returned the receiver to the hook. He really needed to think about getting a mobile phone as part of the next trade-up. And besides, why was his nan going through Mrs. Barry's rubbish bin?
Our final extract from Trading Vincent Crowe is from a part of the book that the author D.C. J. Wardle says he particularly enjoyed writing. It draws on his own experience from his work in northern Uganda, when a cook at the staff accommodation misguidedly sprayed a can of insecticide at a lighted gas stove. Remarkably, the cook was fine, but the destruction to the kitchen that resulted was quite incredible.
Vince had been sitting behind the desk at reception. Following what sounded like a small bomb going off from somewhere beneath him, he immediately rushed down to the kitchen in the basement. He had never experienced such a trail of carnage. Firstly, there was a train of soft rolls, marmalade portions and salt cellars making an exodus from the open kitchen door across to the far reaches of the dining room. The kitchen was a collage of broken crockery and splats of diced fruit. Almost everything that had ever been hanging up on a shelf or on a surface had fallen, and most was now on the floor in varying states of disrepair. Antonio De Luca lay on the floor in the corner by the fridge freezer. At first glance, Vince thought he'd had his guts torn apart by what had happened. But closer inspection showed that a large open tin of diced plum tomatoes had fallen on him, followed by a string of mini sausages. Antonio called him over with the air of one who was in a bad play and about to use his last breath to reveal the murderer before croaking. Vince obliged by crunching his way across the floor to where he lay.
What on earth has happened, Mr. De Luca?
It was the cockroach. A spray of the cockroach on the oven and then a boom. It has a crisis. The flame of the gas exploded the can.
Antonio pointed at the gas stove and then did an elaborate boom-type gesture with his hands, accidentally spraying Vince with plum tomato juice. Antonio then gestured to the area next to the stove, where a pile of paper napkins was happily burning. The can of insect spray was nowhere to be seen.
Vincent, quickly now, you must put out of the fire.
With all that was going on, Vince was amazed that despite the accident, Antonio was still keeping up the charade of his Italian accent.
No problem, Mr. De Luca. I'll do that now for you.
The fire was small, and as it was on a stainless steel surface, the threat was not immediate. However, to help calm down the pseudo-Italian in his tomato-y covering, Vince took the fire extinguisher from the floor, pulled the pin, and pointed the nozzle in the direction of the flames.
You've been listening to extracts from the novel Trading Vincent Crowe by D.C.J. Wardle. And the book's available from online retailers, from Matador's website at www.troubadour.co.uk, and you can also order it from your local bookshop. And find out more about the author on his website at www.dcjwardle.co.uk. Thanks for listening and happy reading.